Did you hear the sound?
No.
Awesome.
God damn it.
Okay, we just got to go off my lead then. So, fuck off.
It's fairly standard these days.
Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode beta 856 for Friday the 13th of November 2015. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, and the dude right there laughing at me, which you can see in the little video, is that's Kent. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? You know, one of these days you're going to get that
no,
shit right.
No, I did it right once. I don't have
once.
To do it right anymore.
Check that box.
Nailed it.
Oh, so. My God.
All right, yes. Man. How you been? How you been?
Busy. Like, super, super duper busy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tells me
started,
nothing.
Yeah. I started working for real this week. That was pretty cool.
Like, actual work?
Like, actual, yeah.
Like, going to meetings actually, and doing emails and shit?
Yes, all of that stuff. And it's still not any fun like I thought it was going to be. No, it's actually pretty cool because now I'm actually getting to learn and I like learning, so I'm enjoying it so far.
Cool, cool, cool. Hey, man, we actually have a guest this week.
Yes, 2 weeks in a row, in fact.
I know, like we're getting crazy with it here.
I know.
So we have with us Mr. Chuck Smith from Alamo Bordo. They're in your hometown right now.
Yeah.
How
What's
you
going
doing,
on, Chuck?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Ugh. Yeah. I'm just glad we finally got this thing rolling an hour late, you know?
Hour late? Well, it's on time. It's on time for us.
Almost.
Just because you didn't, you didn't do daylight saving. So we are exactly on time. It is now 10:02 p.m.
According to the calendar reminder that we have set up, we are an hour late. I don't want to hear shit because I got out of bed with a badass hangover.
Bow down
to
the all-powerful calendar.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
So, let's get right on to it, man. Shiro Tora, what the hell?
That's a karate tournament.
Well, let's hear about it.
Yeah,
fucking
there's
karate
a,
nerd.
Yeah, there's a karate tournament in Alamogordo tomorrow.
I have to interrupt you just for a second. I just called you a karate nerd. There's something about that term that is both delicious and satisfying. Like a karate nerd. That'd be like a football nerd. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you know, it's well, it's funny that you say that.
Karate?
Can you what?
Can you fantasy in karate?
Sure.
Do fantasy karate.
I guess so.
We don't need to get into his bedroom life, all right?
Yeah. Because, you know, Stephanie's in karate too, so, you know, that can get kind of... Anyway, let's move on from that.
Oh, yeah, man. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's funny that you mentioned karate nerd because that's actually a trademark term. There's I think he's like a fifth degree or sixth degree named Jesse Inkamp that he trademarked the karate nerd thing. And he's got a website and a blog and all kinds of stuff. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, so Shiro Tora.
Anyway, so Shiro Tora, actually, that's Japanese for white tiger. And it's a karate tournament that we have every year in Alamogordo. It's hosted by my dojo, Complete Martial Arts. And that's tomorrow. So, I'm going to drink some beer tonight, stay up really late, and get up at 6:30 tomorrow morning to go do some karate stuff.
Go get your ass kicked. All right.
That's going to be
awesome.
Kind of an all-day event. So, it's going to be a blast. I can't wait.
Yay, scheduled ass kickings.
Well, as long as you know it's coming.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if that makes it any better.
How was your week, Chuck?
It was pretty good. It was short for work. I took off. We had Veterans Day on Wednesday, and then I took off the tail end of this week to have a day off and help my wife do some stuff. But for the most part, just a lot of – I actually got a lot more computer time this week than I normally do. I'm usually out running around and talking to people more than anything else, but I actually got to sit down and – somewhat feel like I accomplished something. I was very proud of myself.
That's always good.
Yeah, you know, life has gone a little astray when almost accomplishing something is the goal.
Right. Yes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. We never want to finish it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mission started. Accomplishment achieved.
You never want to finish it because it provides job security. So
right, well, right. Yeah, there's that. Yeah, I think we're all a little misled on that one, but I'm willing to go with it. So I had a very short week as well. We had Wednesday and Friday off. Thursday was a training day, which actually turned out to be a good training day for what it was. Wow. And Monday and Tuesday were just catching up after the exercise from last week. And really, really quick week, actually. Last night I went and saw Tommy Davidson perform here at the club. Supposed to host for him, but then they kind of nixed that the last second because his promoter wanted to host for him. And I guess when you're semi-rich and semi-powerful, you get to say things like that. So instead, I just watched the show and had some drinks and had a good time. And I got to say, his birthday was just a couple days ago. He's like 52 years old, but he is still funny. And the thing that got me was a lot of the skits that he did last night were ones from, you know, classic days, but with a slightly different take on it or a different version of it. And it was still pretty damn funny. So I was cool with it. I liked it.
Right on.
All right, man. What's the geekiest thing you did this week, man?
All right. So I was cruising Netflix the other night, like I tend to do. I you know, that's the weird thing about Netflix. I usually spend way more time just surfing through to see what they have than actually watching things.
Yeah.
So I did that for so long that I realized I only had like, I don't know, 45 minutes or something to actually watch something. And I found something that was 30 minutes long and I decided to give it a shot. It's called Kung Fury.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, walk us through this decision process. Now, you've already stated that you had 45 minutes. You have 45 minutes to watch something and then move on with your life, whatever you had to do. So you're cut down in time. Now, what made you decide? What was it like the cover art, or was it just the description or the name? What was that had you decide to go for this particular viewing experience?
All right. Well, first of all, it was under the category suggestions for me. So it was like four or five down in the list. And I remember my son Lucas had said something in the not too distant past that I should watch this thing. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And so anyway, so I saw it on my list of suggestions and I clicked on it and it was only 30 minutes long or like 32 minutes long or something like that. I was like, maybe. And then I read the description. I was like, okay, this has got to be bad. I was like, fuck it. It's 30 minutes. So I clicked on it. It's one of the single greatest decisions I've ever made in my life. Kung Fury is one of the most amazing things I have ever watched. It started as a Kickstarter, apparently. Sometime this year. It
was something you're already a fan of.
Yeah, oh, I love Kickstarter. Kickstarter is the shit. It's a Kickstarter film, and obviously they got funded, and they're on Netflix, they're on YouTube, they're on all kinds of stuff. And this movie is basically a love letter to the 80s, like 80s cop movies. And holy shit. Chuck, you watched it as well.
Twice, actually.
See?
I couldn't help it. I watched it when you referred it to me to it, and then I went back this morning, partly because I didn't want to talk about it, but I went back this morning to look at it again. It's
Oh my god, it is the most amazing thing. This character is, he's basically like Ryu from Street Fighter 2. That's what he looks like, and he's got this like epic action hero voice, and he is the greatest cop that ever lived. He is an extreme badass. He's the chosen one and was able to learn kung fu like instantly, I guess. And he's the greatest kung fu fighter that ever lived. And he's the greatest cop that ever lived. And the basic plot is that a villain time traveled from the past into the future, which is modern day, which is like, I think, what, 1985? And the villain, his name is Kung Fuhrer. and it's Adolf Hitler. And the reason that he didn't actually die in the 40s, he disappeared because he time traveled to 1985. And Kung Fuhrer is like the second greatest kung fu artist of all time. And there's time travel, and there's laser raptors, and Thor makes an appearance, and it's just
I have to watch this.
Yes, you. Yes, it's this, mandatory.
I'm watching this immediately after the podcast today.
Yes. And your life will be way better for it. It is amazing.
That's awesome.
Another one scene later in there when there's a time travel event and Kung Fury goes back to the finally makes it back to the 40s, and it's a fight scene in there. The only thing that kept running through my head was Johnny Cage wins. That's all
yes.
I heard.
Oh my god!
The entire time in my head, just over and over again. It was worth the 30 minutes. Actually, worth the hour, because like I said, I watched it twice.
Wow. So, I basically spent 30 minutes just looking like this, like. Just smiling. It was great.
I got to get a screenshot of that later. Put that that's awesome. That is awesome. All right. So the geekiest thing I did all week, I didn't even watch a TED Talk. I didn't spend a whole lot of time on YouTube. I mean, I spent a little bit of time on YouTube, which means like 5 hours. But I redid our OBS, our broadcasting software, to where we actually have some proper overlays. It's not all overly graphic, and got a title screen down. I can actually have two or three hosts. Like, I spent probably a good 5 hours on Wednesday redoing all of our broadcasting stuff for our audience. So that's
right,
pretty
on
much what I did this. That's really the only thing I accomplished this week.
Hey, at least you were productive.
Yeah, I did start planning my trip for my PCS 3 days ago or 2 days ago. Was my halfway point in Korea. So started actually sitting down and looking at dates and looking at dates, dollars, and dives. You know, the time we're going to be traveling, how we're going to get there, and how we're going to afford it, and what we're going to be doing along the way. So. But yeah, it's fun. I really enjoy planning trips. My problem is that there's just so many unknowns right now that I can't quite really capture all of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll get better. The closer we get there, the better it'll be. And I think we have a pretty solid plan, because it's a very large logistical move, because we're moving a large distance. And of course, I'm on the verge of it, but I can't quite say where we're going yet. I don't know. Have I said it on the podcast or not? I don't know.
I don't think you did. You might have let it slip like 20 episodes ago or something like that.
Maybe. Anyway, it's a very large move, and we're taking the travel trailer with us, and we have non-military dependents that are moving with us, and it's a lot of pieces in the puzzle. So it's gonna be a fun logistical quest of mine to make that happen. So, mm-hmm. And then there's always the thing on whether or not Kent's going to travel with me when I take the trailer cross country and stuff. So, I have to plan for
nope.
I have to plan for both those scenarios, you know, with or
nope.
without.
So. No shenanigans at all on that trip.
Oh no, not at all. I think the biggest factor with me is going to be leave, because I'm starting from zero leave. And yep. trying to build that up now.
And it's looking like about an 8-day trip.
Yeah.
With the trailer, so. I don't know, you can always get to use some extra time or whatever else. We can talk about that offline, though. That's,
yeah, of course,
there's,
yeah.
There's games and ways around it, so. Anyway.
Right, yeah.
So, last week we mentioned Darth Jar Jar.
Hey.
And it essentially went like this. We discussed Darth Jar Jar, and we had one of our viewers email in what amounts to a multi-page manifesto on ideas about Darth Jar Jar and other theories on Star Wars. So instead of trying to read a multi-page email or trim it down because, well, we're just too lazy, we invited him on the show. So, Chuck, You've got some ideas.
I have more than a few, unfortunately.
But well, first of all, let me say real quick, I am a huge Star Wars nerd. I'm probably the biggest Star Wars fan that I'd met in my life up to a certain point. Yeah, Chuck's got me beat. Chuck is a way bigger Star Wars nerd than I am.
Mm.
So, yeah. So, all right. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Do we want to start with Darth Jar Jar, or we want to go down some of the smaller ones real quick that I sent with it?
Let's hit Darth Jar Jar because the fires are stoked on that.
Word. So, to briefly rehash, is that the idea is that Jar Jar has been or was always intended to be. Darth, Sith Lord in the background that is either running co with Palpatine or is actually manipulating Palpatine or other events to try to eventually slay him as Sith do. And that there's evidence for this primarily in the Phantom Menace, throughout it, partly in put out on Reddit. Eventually made its own website because it got so much attention and it's floated around circles. When it first came out, I ignored it the first 20 times. Like, it came up on my Facebook timeline because I was like, just, whatever, it's Jar Jar, don't care. And then finally it came up like the 21st, the 31st time it came up. I said, okay, I got to read this because it finally came up on a site that I'm fairly familiar with and I found it's reputable. So I'll go read through it, read all that, and start going through the examples. And part of it is... for instance, it references the after Jar Jar meets Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon in the forest, takes him to Gungan City. He does a rather extravagant somersault into the lagoon, and their first thing is that, you know, that's a 20-foot, you know, jump, which I argue that number, but whatever. You know, it's a 20-foot jump. It's a, you know, flipping Jedi type somersault, which mirrored some of the ones that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon do later in the movie. And, you know, my first thought the second I saw the GIF that they had on it was, it's that hard to believe that a big, tall, lanky alien can jump 20 feet? That just seems kind of odd to me. And, you know, like I said, normally with these kind of things, I don't really pay much mind to them because, you know, it's people thinking in theoretics, but I'm like, oh, that's simple physics. It's, you know, he's taller, he's made for this. This is not the first time he's jumped in this lagoon, obviously, because he can breathe air, so he's got to come out some. Come on, guys. Later, they spent a lot of time during the entire thing. Pardon me, turning my head a little bit. Talking about how he's using mind control tricks throughout the thing. One we've seen that's referenced is before the main battle at the end. He's talking to Boss Nass, and they're walking next to each other, and he's talking. And it's that part where he gets promoted, given a title of general or whatever. And they keep saying, well, he keeps waving his hand at him. Okay. There's lots of people who wave hands in Star Wars, and they're not necessarily controlling their mind. You know, it's...
Right.
You know, it seems like a lot of the theory behind it was stretching it. But when you get... But, well, what I will give them is this, is when you read through the whole thing, it's a structured argument. I don't know if it was meant to be or if it really was meant to be funny to begin with, but it is a rather structured argument, and they do give examples. Now, I can refute every one of them, but still, nonetheless, it's structured. It's good reading, and it's a good theoretical exercise. And when you get to the end of it, and you know, there's enough plausible there to sit there and go, okay, all right, I see where you're going with this. But if they turn around and do that, I'm one of the few people that I'll admit it. I don't mind Jar Jar. I don't care. I don't know why some people have such visceral reactions to him, to be honest with you. I can understand why you'd want to have maybe a little bit more serious character, or, you know, a little less bumbling. Maybe, you know, I've had people that got on just for his accent. I'm like, really? But, that's fine. Whatever. But at the end of the day, I don't mind him so much. But the thing is that if this ends up, if somehow in some alternate universe, this ends up being true, and one of these movies, there better be a 20-minute, megalomaniacal, Palpatine-esque Bond villain monologue on how this works, because there's no way all of this adds up to Jar Jar being some sort of Sith sorcerer that's controlling the entire universe.
Instead of a long Bond type, like a monologue kind of thing, what I was thinking about was the end of The Sixth Sense when we figure out the twist ending there. It's like, what, probably 20-second little like flash reel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I had pictured it. If this was actually come to fruition, it'd be just like a real quick, like, oh, yeah, remember this, remember this, remember this, remember this. Oh, look.
there is a meme floating around out there that says, I see Jar Jar.
The only problem I have with this theory is the same problem I had with Jar Jar, which isn't his accent or the way he talks or the attempt at comic relief that he was, you know, intended for in episode one. It's the poor CGI. All of this, the hand movements and the lip syncing and everything else that goes along, his spectacular 20-foot jump, all that other stuff. I just put it down to really crappy attempts at CGI. Right.
I think at the time in 1999, that was pretty good CGI.
But
it looks like shit now.
They made the whole movie that way, though.
Well, right. Yeah.
They're like, hey, here's a half-assed technology. Let's do everything we possibly can with it. And that's the problem I had with the first movie.
No, and there were other parts of it that were better.
Nobody was saying that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was saying it then too. Like I didn't appreciate the CGI back then.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, it was overdone. There was a lot of critique about like wow, there was way too much CGI and stuff like that.
The whole thing was CGI except for the desert scene that they shot. You know,
right.
The whole series was CGI except for the desert scenes they shot all at the same time.
I thought some of the issue with the CGI and particularly in how much they used is you have Jar Jar, which is really floppy. Which there was actually an explanation in the theory about that also, but they did so much of it, like the droidicas and how they unfold, you know, is actually really reminiscent of how they did the Transformers almost a decade later, or actually over a decade later. And it was actually really good, but the problem was it got lost because they used so much. And as soon as they got out of there, they started backing off of it to some degree or getting a little better about using it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what some of it, because that was something that always kind of bothered me about Jar Jar's character too. I just assumed that it kind of went with a personality type.
The flips that you know, Qui-Gon and mm-hmm. you know, all the fight with Yoda, was it the second one, episode two, or whatever?
Yeah. Oh, in the Senate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even all that, it was just, you know.
You know, I've got extremely mixed feelings about the Yoda and Dooku fight. The way it starts with Yoda walking in with his cane, and then he drops his cane and opens his robe, and the whole build up and the musical build up. And I talked a couple episodes ago about how important the music is to Star Wars. That scene will still give me goosebumps right up until they actually start fighting. then it kind of gets goofy.
I just think that whole scene would have been better if Yoda had maintained that frailty that was shown and was still able to, you know, the fight would have still been able to continue the way that it did, but he maintained that frailty that he was shown. I thought it would have had a lot more character to it, a lot more personality.
I think they were trying to show because in some of the books they talk about how like you can use the Force to kind of almost like a stim boost where that kind of lets you put away pain, or you know, on the dark side actually use pain, and I think they tried to do that without really explaining that, you know, because that really wasn't out there at the time in many of the books. They came back later and kind of explained that, and that's why I look at that scene now. I don't mind it so much. I had some of the initial kind of issues with it the same way. I'm too much into Star Wars not to just accept it, but you know, still nonetheless, it was one of those things that I think they didn't explain.
They spent
very
too
well.
Much time trying to explain how they were going to fuck up the whole universe with midichlorians.
Yeah,
that bit.
All right, so what about some of these other rumors here?
Well, I'll start with some of the smaller, funny ones that kind of made me look at and go, really? There was a rumor out earlier before the summer. May this year, I think, that Daniel Craig, who is currently James Bond, was going to make a cameo as a stormtrooper in the movie, and along with some other people. Apparently, it got spelled by Simon Pegg, the Scotty from Star Trek. And he was apparently supposed to do it. He said supposedly that Craig was going to do it. No, I shouldn't have said that, so on and so forth. And, you know, there's a thing about it in The Guardian, and then the Telegraph came back and said, no, he said he's not doing it, yada, yada. After I read all of that, I kind of looked at it and went, how would you know? They're stormtroopers. The only one I've ever seen take the helmet off is Finn.
Right, yeah.
I technically haven't seen that because it's only in the trailer.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, it could be Gandhi under that thing. I don't know. It's who's going to know? That's the point of them.
Yeah.
TK 007?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Along with that was a rumor. It was actually from early last year. I've not seen any place where it's really refuted it, except for the trailer you tuned me into like literally half an hour ago. was that Judi Dench was going to play Mon Mothma. And which was actually kind of interesting because I could see her do that. I went and looked, and she's 80. Caroline Blankston, who is the person who played Mon Mothma, is actually 83. So, but her IMDb listing stops in 2006, so she stopped doing movies, whereas Judi Dench is actually in the James Bond movie that came out last week, or this week, or whatever week. So she's still acting. So I kind of bought that, but there's no reference to Mon Mothma on IMDb. Of course, there's not one for Luke Skywalker either. So,
right.
On IMDb there is. There's no other reference to Luke Skywalker anywhere.
Right.
Else,
not so. On StarWars.com or anything.
No, there's nothing anywhere. I went and looked that up. That kind of ties into the Kylo Ren is Luke Skywalker's rumor, which there's a lot of people running with that. I personally don't buy that for a number of reasons. The bigger idea to me, and it's kind of like if you read it in other kind of articles about the movie, is that it seems more like the movie's going to be kind of like the search for Spock. They're going out there trying to find him, and for whatever reasons he's exiled himself, which is not too far from the EU. The EU, the expanded universe, actually has him kind of going off and into self-exile a couple of times, and he goes and locks himself away in one of the Jedi academies and stuff like that. So that's not in of itself not that crazy. But Ren is Luke's... I mean, the problem with Adam Driver has already been officially named as Cecil Ren is the problem in of itself. He's half the size of Mark Hamill. The bite double doesn't work. You know, he's obviously
seen,
a lot...
You've seen Mark Hamill's fat? Like...
I'm saying you could put Mark Hamill in Obi-Wan's robes and you'll know it's Mark Hamill. That's all I'm saying.
I thought it was interesting the coincidence that Mark Hamill is the currently the age that Sir Alec Guinness was when he originally played Obi-Wan. So yeah, I thought that was a key thing there, and I don't think that's to be overlooked. I think that might actually. I mean, it's sure maybe coincidence. But yeah, I don't think coincidence. So
my whole theory with Luke Skywalker is that this movie is going to follow the pattern of the first movie in the previous two trilogies. So Star Wars or Episode 4, when it came out, the Jedi Master, the wise sage character, was Obi-Wan. By the end of the movie, he was killed by the Sith Lord. So let's fast forward to the prequel trilogy. The Jedi Master in that movie, the wise sage character, was Qui-Gon. By the end of that movie, he was killed by a Sith Lord.
Spoiler alert. Holy shit.
Yeah, well, in this movie, the wise sage character, the Jedi Master, is going to be Luke Skywalker. Stands to reason to me that it's going to follow the pattern. He's going to die by the end of the movie, probably by Kylo Ren or some other Sith or evil character.
And that theory is floating out there, is that Luke they will find Luke and that he will fulfill that Obi-Wan type role, if not that ending necessarily happening in this movie very early in the next. And but there's also theories as to all the theories that are out there seem to agree that some main character is going to die. And I can buy that. Not depends how you look at it, who it is. It could be anybody. I mean, in the EU, Chewie dies. So, I mean, you know, and there's theories about that it's going to be him. There's all theories that it's going to be Chewie's going to die and it's Luke that's going to kill him and so on and so forth. And
it's totally Han.
Well, there is. And what do you use?
I'm basing that on a very, very simple idea.
Harrison Ford is in his 80s.
Harrison Ford was the last of the original three to sign up for the movies. He was the one that took the longest to convince, and he's the one that has the star power to most likely have the story reflect his personal views on it.
Well, he wanted his character to die in The Empire, or I'm sorry, in Return of the Jedi,
right?
Originally,
right. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to come in. He's going to fulfill that strong masculine role on the hero side to start with. I think at sometime during the movie, his character will die. Han Solo will die, maybe with or without Chewie. I don't know. And before the end of the movie, they will find or otherwise locate or know the location of Luke Skywalker. I don't think he will start the movie in it. And I think that's where it really gets interesting, because it's one of those things where, okay, we have R2, and R2's floating around with, you know, Princess Leia or whatever else, or whatever her new title is or whatever, floating around with Leia, but R2 knows where Luke is. And
well,
I think,
if they follow the theory of the EU, R2 never got wiped. So if they borrow that from EU, then yeah, he would absolutely know where he is.
Right.
Yeah, R2 is the only character that knows everything.
Yeah. but he's been told, you know, been instructed. I'm going to say instructed. That could be verbal or programmatically. Or programmatically.
He would have programmed himself.
Yeah, one way or the other. He's been instructed to not give away that information to anyone until a certain circumstance happens. And I think maybe that circumstance will be Han's death.
Hmm.
I could kind of buy that.
Okay.
So that's my personal theory. I haven't read that anywhere. That's just putting the pieces together and hearing the conversations from the people that I listen to on the podcast and, you know, things like that.
It's going to be interesting in about a month and a week from now to go back and listen to this episode and just laugh about how ridiculous we sound.
Mm. And while we're talking about theories, I'd love to throw one out of my own that this probably has no shot in hell, but still nonetheless, I think would be interesting, is the fact that, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, like, so started this one with Ren is Luke. The thing was, I went back, I thought about it, and there's, you know, gone through the reasons as to why not. But the other thing is that when you listen to the trailer, Ren's talking to Vader's mask, you know, I will finish what we started, so on and so forth. The thing is that suggests some sort of intimate knowledge of Vader, which so far as the movies are concerned, really is only Palpatine and Luke. You know, Leia doesn't know him as who he actually is and so on and so forth. And so it kind of got me, it's like, well, who else do I know from, you know, again, EU and all you people that are going to sit there and talk about that's not canon, stop it. The thing is that in the Force Unleashed games and the subsequent books, Starkiller is a clone was the first game he's an actual person, and the second game he's a clone. And at the end of Force Unleashed 2, if you could choose the dark side ending, he's killed by another apprentice that Vader just has. It's the dark apprentice who is another clone of Starkiller. And he sends him out at the end and goes into the downloadable content for Endor, where he goes out hunting down Jedi. So, you know, and he sends him to the Outer Reaches, which is, you read any Star Wars books, can take you years just to get to, much less go around trying to find rogue Jedi and come back. So, you know, just saying.
Mm.
Nice.
Yeah, so, yeah. You never know.
Now, there is one theory that I can't really reconcile, and it's just because I don't know enough about it.
What?
And that is, I ran into one, I haven't had a chance to research, is really what I mean. There's one that revolves screenshot of Finn carrying what looks like an awfully familiar looking lightsaber. The hilt is supposedly the one from Luke's from The Empire Strikes Back. Now, as we know, Luke gets hand cut off, hand, lightsaber disappear into the abyss, wherever it goes. Theoretically, it would have come out in exhaust port like he did after the battle was over. So the question, the question that gets postulated with this theory is that somehow it's floated off into space.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Fallen on Jakku, which is the one of the planets in supposedly in the Force Awakens, and that is their trigger or what they're trying to use or something. They're trying to get it back to Luke Skywalker. Now the thing is that in a few shots that we see of Finn with a lightsaber, it's the right color, hilt's the right shape, it's the right size. It doesn't really show a good enough view of it to see every single gnarl that's in it. So, you know, people like me who, yes, I have screenshots of all the lightsabers, can compare it. But there is that. They're saying that that's probably what is happening. Is they're trying to get it back to Luke, which, you know, which would lead to the theory that one of the two new main characters is Force sensitive and would end up using it. Again, theoretically, would be Finn, since he's the one we see in the snapshot.
Or maybe that's where Luke's been this whole time, is out looking for his own lightsaber.
That could be. Now, Bespin's a gas giant, so if it falls normal, it won't go back on.
Let's remember, this is actually Anakin's lightsaber.
Right. And it does point that out in the theory. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And that's why they're saying they would do that, is because it would tie all three sets of trilogies together.
Ah, I see.
And I could see Disney doing that easy. That's not. It's just this matter of explaining how they got a hold of it when, you know, normal planetary gravity tells me that in a gas giant it's going to the core and getting crushed.
But, yeah, well, it could have been an Ugnaught retrieved it and sold it to some space merchant or something, and then.
Well, there's no evidence that it actually fell out of the Cloud City, so it may just be sitting at the bottom down there, you know. Needing some love. Who knows? And it might be a little rusty, but it's down there, you know.
Yeah,
man. Sitting there with a decomposing bloody hand. It's got to be rusted by now.
Yeah. So maybe Lando's had it this whole time.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Now let him explain that one.
What are the chances? Oh, what are the chances we see Lando make an appearance in this series?
I think
That would be awesome because Okay, Star Wars itself is known for keeping secrets from, you know, from the audience until the actual reveal. And J.J. Abrams himself is known for this. In fact, in the second Star Trek movie that he directed, he flat out lied to the audience by saying that because there was a theory going around that Khan was going to be the villain in the second Star Trek movie. And he's like, no, we're not reusing that character. Khan's not in this, whatever. Well, obviously, it turned out to be Khan. So,
but it was a different Khan.
Well, right. But it's basically the same character. So,
but if you're going to be splitting hairs, that's a good hair to split. It's a completely different reality. So, yeah.
But the whole thing with not showing Luke Skywalker and any of the press material, he's got a voiceover in one of the trailers, and we think we might see his hand in one of the scenes.
Actually, voice under, but yeah.
Or, well, whatever.
Splitting hair.
But it's getting us all talking about, like, well, where's Luke? Is he dead? Is he a Sith now? Is he, you know, what's going on there? Well, that could totally be a swerve. I can see this completely being a swerve from J.J. Abrams and from just from the Star Wars franchise altogether, that maybe he's in 90% of the movie and he's just a good Jedi. And this
and they've
is
shown
all
us every shot that he's not in.
Exactly.
Yeah. How pissed off would you be if, like, all this theory about where Luke Skywalker is and he's actually in the opening scene?
Right.
Sitting there in a chair, like, never even gets up. Doesn't get up, doesn't use a lightsaber, no force powers or anything else. Just sitting in the chair. Like, he's in a chair in every scene in the background, just chilling out. like a little Easter egg waiting to happen on. Even in the trailers, we just haven't seen it yet, you know? Like,
he's got a faded picture behind the word crawl at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Just sitting in the background.
Yeah, every time there's an A, he's actually the blank space in the A is actually a really small picture of him in a chair.
Or he's just in the background doing the YMCA. So,
making up letters. It's right. A T.
So to bring this all back around to Lando Calrissian, you know, we've received no indication thus far that Lando is in it, that Billy Dee Williams is not in the credits at all. Maybe he is there. Maybe he is going to be in the movie and it's just being kept from us.
Yeah.
Because Billy Dee Williams did play Lando in the current animated series, Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
So
So he does still have some involvement there. That's pretty
right,
awesome.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
There's a lot of instances in, again, in EU, well, even in the books after Disney took over, there's a lot of instances where Lando is used in the middle of books, kind of like he is in the movies. He doesn't show up until the second movie.
Right.
He's used as that intermediary, like, okay, we're in a tough spot. We need somebody with seedy contacts and doesn't mind doing dirty work and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, there's Lando. Right. And he's one of those people that tends to find himself in the middle of things because of people he's known in his development of his various sundry businesses and, you know, ends up getting put in a tough spot because of it. So it would not surprise me at all if they turned around and did that again this time, especially if they were to, you know, if they were to kill off Han, then, I mean, to fulfill that older smuggler role, that's the only person you really have left.
Right.
Unless you can bring in a Dash Rendar or something, which, you know, good luck with that.
I think we should just wrap it up by watching this this little trailer here. It's a honest trailer by the Screen Junkies, and we're gonna do this partially just to try out this right here. Click on here, and there it is. So people watching should be able to see the screen. And I'm gonna give you a little treat of a Korean commercial while we're at it. This is a. So here we go.
여기다 모여 있었네. 아유 닭꼬풀아. 오늘은 크림 생수염을 만들어 볼 텐데 이렇게 우유를 마시면 수염이 생겼죠. 여기까지 이게 어린이용이고 이제 어른용이니까 절대 스킵하면 안 돼요. 짠. 이제 본격적으로 어른용을 배워볼 텐데. Oh, 이건 아니에요.
The puppet's kissing.
준비물은 거품, 크림생 맥스.
In a beer commercial.
Never not fun.
저 따먹는 거 봤어 저번에. 첫 번째 스타일은 찰리 채플린 스타일. 엄지와 검지를 손톱만큼 벌려서 코 밑에 대고 맥스를 맛있게 원샷. 짠, 짠.
Oh man, it's actually really disturbing.
이번엔 산타 크루스.
Wow, he got a beer goatee.
완샤, 완샤, 완샤.
Oh geez.
완샤.
He might need to cut down on the beer a little bit.
This is an extremely long commercial.
All of them are here. Like there are no short commercials for YouTube.
Like, that would drive me insane. Yeah.
This would drive me to get YouTube Red.
Okay, here's the actual video.
Hey, is that Leia? It kind of looks like her from Return of the Jedi.
I don't know. Is that the Crash Star Destroyer from the first teaser?
Will you guys stop? I'm trying to watch the trailer.
Who are you? Depends who you ask. There's a lot of fan theories floating around. But you can backorder a tiny version of my droid for $150.
Nothing will stand in our way. We will fix what you started.
I don't like sand. It's coarse, rough, and irritating. And it gets everywhere.
Stories about what happened.
Yippee!
It's true. All of it. Midichlorians.
Without the midichlorians, life cannot exist.
Jar Jar.
Misa Kotja Jar Binks.
The special editions. They're real. But forget all that. Some new nerd's directing now. And this looks awesome. Hey. Remember those things? TIE fighters are still cool, right? Who's that guy? He looks bad. I bet it's giving you goosebumps right about now. We could show you 2 hours of a monkey washing a cat, and you'd still go see this movie. Twice.
The prequels. They're gnawing at you. Just let them go.
It's on you, Abrams.
Where's Luke? Did he turn to the dark side or something? Why isn't he in the trailer?
What do you want him to do? Give away the whole movie? Hey, guys, don't forget, fantastic. The trailers for The Phantom Menace also were kind of cool. Don't ruin this for me!
Oh, man. So there's that.
And that pretty much sums up our entire conversation up to this
point. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So today is Friday the 13th, man.
Sure is.
Oh, what a day. What a day.
Yeah. So speaking of Friday the 13th and referencing back to Kickstarter, like we started the conversation about, somebody came up with an idea for a Friday the 13th game, and Kickstarter would be the best place to find funding for it. Well, they were able to get the current license holder, which is the director of the original Friday the 13th movie, a whole bunch of actors that were in the movies, voice talent, all kinds of video game programmers and talent in that realm. The person that did the original score for Friday the 13th is involved. They gathered all of this Friday the 13th talent, and they came up with an idea for a video game that celebrates the series. And basically what the game is, it's a 1v7 multiplayer game where one person is Jason and the other six players are camp counselors. Jason's goal, obviously, is to kill all of the counselors. And it's seven counselors. Yeah, it's 1v7.
Because why not? So
all of the other seven characters, their only goal is to survive the night. They can either work together, they can work separately, they can do, you know, it's pretty much an open world. Right. It's at Camp Crystal Lake. It is basically an open world environment. And they can do, you know, they can try to escape from the camp. They can try to get the cops there. They can try to kill Jason. They can just try to hide for the entire time. It looks absolutely amazing. It's on Kickstarter, and it's either ending in the next 15 minutes or it ended like 45 minutes ago. But the Kickstarter, yeah, of course. Exactly. The Kickstarter ends on Friday the 13th, which I thought was just a brilliant touch. And I was hoping when I was preparing for the show notes and everything, and I realized that it was Friday the 13th, I was like, oh, perfect. I'll highlight the Friday the 13th Kickstarter and try to promote it. Well, by the time this show airs, it's either over or it's about to be over. And they've already met their goal anyway. So the only thing that you could do really at that point is get your donor rewards, or, you know, try to push them over the top for
stretch goals.
It's showing successfully raised $823,704 with 12,218 backers.
Yeah, yeah. So it was pretty popular. It was you know, easily got funded. So that was pretty cool. Speaking of Kickstarters, though, the popular one right now is Mystery Science Theater 3000, MST3K, is making a comeback, and it is Kickstarter funded.
Bring back Mystery Science by Joel Hodgson.
Yep. Yep.
Nice. And it's currently. Let's pause that. It's actually got the original TV role. 15,000 backers, $1.6 million out of $2 million goal with 28 yep. days left. That's going to get started.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. It's only been live for
new season of up to 12 feature-length movie riffing episodes.
Yep. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, that's going to be great. That's
they're going to make that goal, bring it back, but I still don't have season 2 of Firefly. I'm a little upset.
Yes. I think if we can just convince Joss Whedon to just go ahead and fucking do it, I think everyone else will be on board. They could even kickstart it.
Whedon. I think it's Fox.
It's Fox.
I think it's
Josh Whedon. Josh Whedon and all the characters said they would come back and do it if somebody would buy the rights from Fox.
Yep, but Fox has got a grip on the rights, like
for another 10-15 years, I think.
If they're not going to fucking do anything with it, which they're obviously not, they need to sell the rights. Sell it to Joss, and he can fund it with either Kickstarter or Indiegogo or GoFundMe or any of that
door-to-door campaign, picking up pennies. I don't care. Make that shit happen.
Whatever price Fox gives, we will raise that money in probably about 24 hours.
Yeah.
Fox keeps a license. Yeah. Well, Fox keeps a license because they make a lot of money off the merchandising right now, and that, I think, is part of the problem.
Well, as we heard a couple months ago from Margaret Weiss, I mean, they have the license to create the game and things like that. It's just a matter of the television rights and the movie rights, things like that. Right. Fox just isn't letting go.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, our own fandom is our demise.
Yeah.
We're our own demise when it comes to this because we keep buying Firefly shit.
Yep. And they don't even need to sell the rights. They just need to license it out to them for, you know, whatever, for another series or whatever, you know?
They can keep 50% of any profits, and everybody is going to get rich out of the deal.
Yep. And we get our damn TV show. Like, give us what we want. I don't even watch TV. I would fucking die for that. So.
Great. That'd be great.
Put that shit on Netflix only. Let us fucking sit there and binge watch it day one.
Oh, jeez.
And then binge watch it on day two.
Yeah, we were talking about the Firefly game. You know, I picked up that RPG, and I have yet to finish reading the rules so I can host a game. I promised Chuck probably 2 or 3 months ago that I was going to do that. I promised Lucas months ago that we were going to do that, and it still hasn't happened. And I just realized that it's buried under some paperwork that I have sitting over here in the corner. So I'm going to have to break that out. But speaking
your whole office is buried in paperwork right now.
That is true. That is true. This is the messiest room in the house right now. It's pretty bad. But Chuck, speaking of tabletop gaming, we've kind of got a little tabletop gaming thing going on, even though it's only happened once so far.
We actually had one. That's better than I thought.
Exactly. We got it off the ground. But so you wanted to say a few words about tabletop gaming, I think.
Just briefly, there's been a resurgence of late in the last couple of years of tabletop gaming. I actually think that's really good. And one of the reasons is actually my own daughter. I tell anybody who'll sit for 5 minutes and listen a story about my daughter. She got interested in board games. She sees me playing. I've played board games for years, board games, card games. I still have old Decipher Star Wars game cards that you could barely find anymore. I still look for people to play them. Because the thing was, like, when I was younger, it was fun because with the Star Wars game, you go places, you play games with people, you meet new people, you interact with them, you have to deal with them because they're sitting right there. That's one of the reasons why, like, you know, Magic's really big but the tabletop gaming is starting to get to that point again where you actually go to people's houses and have game nights, and it's good for that social interaction. That's better. I mean, if you I know a friend of mine back home that does them now, and just like, you know, you go to a party, you put the keys in the bowl, he takes their cell phones and puts them in the other room. And they're forced to sit there and play. Unless there's an app, unless there's like a scorekeeping app that's required, and he goes, gets his note and brings it in and uses that. And because I think it's starting to get to a point where, like, with this kind of technology where we're Skyping over, you know, you're in another country and so on. So that's great and everything. But the thing is, we're so buried into our technology and stuff. It's good to every once in a while sit down and do something different. Mm-hmm. But with my daughter, she saw us playing, saw me start collecting games again and playing them with. I've gotten Mariana into a couple of them because we found some of their kind of resource based up her alley. Catan's one of them. But we went and got her a princess version of. Disney princesses version, because, you know, Disney, between Star Wars and Disney princesses, that they just have my hooks in me. I can't get out of it. of Candyland. And if you don't know how Candyland works, basically, you know, the adults get two cards, you pick one, you move forward to whatever the next color space is. Well, in this one, there's special spaces that are aligned with the different Disney princesses, and you pick it and you go to it. The adults, you pick it. If it's behind you, or you get it, and it's behind you, you go back words on the game, which is bad. But for the little kids, you pick one and they go forward, and if they pick one that makes them go back, you just ignore it and give them another one. Well, one day I was sitting down with Elise, she's 5 now, she was 4 then, and we were playing. I said, you know, let's try this, see what happens. So I gave her two cards, and she had a choice, a regular one and then one with a princess on it, but it was behind her. And she wants the princess one because it's a Disney princess, why wouldn't she? And I said, well, if you take this one, you're going to go back. She's like, well, I want the princess. Okay, here you go. And I moved her back on the board. And she stopped. She looked at it. like, okay. Came back 2-3 days later, played it again. I gave her the choice. It's actually, ironically, the exact same choice. And she has, ever since then, not taken the princess behind her. And that got me to sit and think, that's something that we don't teach kids on that level anymore. Because that's the start of critical thinking. That's the start of sitting there going, taking a situation and going, this is bad for me, this is good for me, even though I really like this, this is better for me, I need to make this choice. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually kind of glad that with this board game resurgence, that some of the games that we used to play are starting to slide age groups back a little bit to get these kids to play games and make them critically think. Elise, that's my daughter, she kills us at life. She plays life with Mariana because Mariana loves life. She kills us. She absolutely destroys me every time we play. And she went over. We were playing Munchkin that one time when we did have a card game. And I had them out the other day. Every once in a while, I'll try to play games solitaire just to remember how to play the rules. And she came in, and she wants to play. And she actually picked the cards up. She's starting to read now. And she picked the cards up and said, well, Daddy, this one goes with that one. And I'm like, sure enough, it did. It was a warrior, and things said warrior only. And I'm like, oh, all right, cool. So she's starting to make decisions based off of that. And I think that's good. If for no other reason, if you can get your whole family to sit down together and do something that doesn't involve watching it, even if you have the TV on in the background, just do something together that is good for everybody, especially if it starts them with critical thinking like that. And it's just something that's kind of close to me, just having grown up with games and everything like that. But to actually see that in my daughter and have that trigger to me is just something that's very important. I preach that to everybody I can. Hey, get your son or daughter a game. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be something you're interested in. It doesn't matter. If you're interested in it, I promise you they will be interested in it. If only for a year or two, but if you get them to start thinking like that, then that's what's...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well put.
We've actually had game night at our place, you know, back when I was at home several times, and it's always a no cell phone, no computer, no distraction kind of time. And it really enhances things. Now, the twins will get itchy, like we'll play Monopoly, and the twins will get itchy and just start making wrong decisions on purpose. They can go check their phones. but it always comes down to, no matter who's playing, it's everybody against me because I have this knack of winning Monopoly. But
Monopoly is a family destroyer.
You are Donald Trump.
Well, that's just it. I play the game straight up. Like, I don't play any crazy rules. I don't try to convince people of maniacal things or anything else. I'm very upfront and very straightforward, and I think that throws everybody off when I play because they're like, what are you getting out of this? I get this property. I like Indiana Avenue. I don't understand the problem is, you know, but you don't have the other ones. Right. I like Indiana Avenue, you know.
Right, yeah. If nothing else, I'm blocking someone else from having a monopoly.
There you go. That's a lot, that's it a lot of times. But I really enjoy playing board games, especially with the kids. I tried to get into Munchkin once, but they were only halfway into it, so we never really actually played. I did play with my daughters and with Amber and Ashley and my ex-wife at one time, and that went over like a bag of rocks. So Amber and Ashley loved it, not so much for the ex-wife, so one more reason I like that game. And, you know, it is what it is, right? What else would it be? I agree completely.
Yeah, absolutely. Board games are great. And we used to, the four of us, we used to have kind of a set board game night. I think it was Saturday night. And we kind of got away from that. And I always enjoy it when all four of us are in the mood to play a game, because it's so often that one of us or two of us or maybe three of us are in the mood to play a game, but all four of us to be in the same mood at the same time to play a game, it's not as often as I wish it was.
Yeah.
And because it almost always turns into a really good time when we just say, hey, you know what, screw it, I'm gonna drop whatever it was I was gonna be doing, sit down and play the game. It almost always ends up being a really great time.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right, Chuck. Where can people find more about you if they want to? They say, you know what, that Chuck Smith guy, man, he's right up my fucking alley. I want to I want to, you know, find out how he picks his nose in the morning.
Yeah, I want to stalk this guy.
Yeah.
Where should they start?
I wish I could tell them they could wait in line. I don't. I'm not.
This is
my
the man
person.
Who needs his boogers picked. That's what. That's what I'm getting.
Hey, you know what? I have very few needs. If I can find one person to fill each of them for a reasonable price, I mean, you know, that's my business. I'm actually my main presence is actually on Facebook. But I had a Twitter at one time, but I realized I don't say anything. So I've since shut it down. Though I'm probably going to turn it back up one of these days. But
so you have it like me, where your Facebook automatically ports over to your Twitter, and your Twitter automatically ports over to your Facebook. So whenever you post to one, it posts to both. Because I don't like differentiating between the two. I just go whatever has more bubbles on it. Boop. Okay, right. That's what I'm looking at today. You know. So, All right, man. Kent, how about you, man?
Well, of course, you can find me on Twitter at @rm_delnoche.
Link to the internet.
Yeah, right. Yes, underscores. Fuck underscores.
What's the internet?
Yeah, one of these days I'll get a better Twitter handle. You can also go to ratebeer.com, look up username Del Noche. I've actually got a few rates in there over the past week, one of which is this fine beverage from New Belgium called Pump Kick. And in case you couldn't guess, it's a pumpkin ale. And I made a joke after I submitted my review for this one, because this was the second pumpkin ale that I rated in the same night. And I gave the first one that I reviewed a fairly good review. And then I rated this one, and it was so much better than the first one. And I thought of a joke, you know, always after you hit submit, you think of the good joke. I was going to say, you know, hey, calling out the first beer that I rated, New Belgium just pump kicked your ass, but it was too late. I already hit submit. So anyway, check out my reviews on ratebeer.com, username Del Dunche. What about you, Amos?
At Ethan Kane, since 2008, baby, I've had actually three people have requested me give up that because it's their actual names as opposed to some random shit I used in high school.
Nope.
But no, I keep it. I keep it because I can't use my real name, because that was already taken before I chose Ethan Kane. So apparently 2008 was too late for Twitter.
You can't be you. Nobody can.
I know, right?
Right.
So yeah, you can find it there. Find me there. You can find me on Facebook if you really want to, which I don't know why you'd want to. All the same shit's on Twitter, as I just explained. So
yeah, but check out the show. Check out Ritual Misery Podcast.
Well, yeah.
Is that the Facebook page? Is that the name, Ritual Misery Podcast?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. If you search it.
If you do the search for Ritual Misery, as soon as you get past all the really shitty music, it's us. Like, all of them are us. So just look for Ritual Misery. You can follow the show at Ritual Misery. Submit ideas on our subreddit, ritualmisery.reddit.com. You can email us, podcast@ritualmisery.com. You can call and leave us voicemail, 567-69-TRMPC. That's 567-698-7672. You can find all these links and more at our support page, ritualmisery.com/support, or I think it's /support. ritualmisery.com.
Just go to ritual.
Go to ritualmisery.com. Thank you so much to Kevin McLeod for allowing us to use your music, and thank you for listening and watching. For Kent, for me, and for you, this has been your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Check out Diamond Dialogue. It's actually pretty good. It's completely fan based. It's just one of those things. It was an idea that I had that I thought would be really, really awesome. And I was actually chatting with Tim Beck about it, and he's like, "Oh, you mean like Diamond Dialogue, the one that I already did?" And I was like, "Fuck."